Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pods for Docs. My name is Xinyu, and on this lovely November day in 2022, we have a new member to the team, Dr. Lisa, who is a consultant dermatologist in the United Kingdom. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Today, we're going to be talking about a common dermatological problem with significant morbidity and affects quality of life, which is psoriasis. Dr. Lise, why don't you start us off and tell us, why is psoriasis such an important condition to understand?
Thank you, Xin. I think it's a very important condition to understand, even if you are not a dermatologist. And a lot of primary care patients indeed do suffer from this condition. And they may sit in front of you with a different complaint, and you might find the skin lesions coincidentally. Some people just think that the scaly plaques they have is just a little dry skin, and they are not able to identify it as a potentially systemic disease.
Very fascinating. So why don't we start off with a brief definition? Could you define psoriasis for our listeners?
Psoriasis is a chronic immune-mediated disorder with both cutaneous and systemic manifestations. It mainly affects the skin and also the joints, but it can also involve other organs. And there's more and more evidence coming forward that the cardiac system can be influenced by the inflammatory process of this disease.
That's really important because I think a lot of our listeners would attribute it to a skin condition, but I'm sure we're going to talk about all the other organ involvement as well in a short time. What causes psoriasis then?
So it is a complex pathological process, as one can expect with a condition affecting so many organs. But in essence, it is the abnormal keratinocyte proliferation. And there's also an immune cell infiltration in both the dermis and epidermis. So just to be clear, that is the top layer and the layer just below that in the skin. There's a mixture of genetic and environmental factors, and they are doing a lot of research on this constantly, but it's more and more evident that the genetic component is quite important. There are some forms of psoriasis that is related to infections, and this, of course, will be an environmental factor, especially something like guttate psoriasis, which consists out of multiple small little lesions, also called raindrop-like psoriasis. A very common infection would be a strep pharyngitis. And then also if you speak to patients about trauma and even emotional stress, I must say in clinical practice after the pandemic, we saw quite a flare-up of patients who went through immense stressful times, just developed flare-ups. So that's very interesting. And then, of course, certain medications considered off, a few common ones would include beta blockers, interferon alpha, lithium. So a very complex situation, really.
Well, I'm glad we have you on the podcast to go through it. It sounds like this mixed genetic environmental landscape, which is quite common to other dermatological conditions, and the immune system plays a big role. And that probably explains the systemic effect. I appreciate you for listing out some environmental risk factors, including infections, trauma, stress, as you mentioned, as well as some medication. Could you briefly describe a typical person who you will see with psoriasis then?
It's interesting that both men and women are equally affected. Psoriasis can manifest at any age, really, as we do see it in the pediatric population as well. But onset usually occur between age 18 and 19 years. And then again, in the age bracket, 50 to 69 years of age.
So how common is psoriasis then?
Well, it's written in most textbooks that the estimated global prevalence is 2 to 3%. But one have to keep in mind that it is in different degrees. So, of course, a smaller subset of patients will have severe psoriasis. And then the bigger population of this 2 to 3% will have mild to moderate psoriasis.
Now, have mentioned briefly different types of psoriasis. Could you perhaps expand on this concept of different psoriasis phenotypes, and which one is the most common?
Yes, of course. So there are multiple manifestations of psoriasis. I think the most common type, and if most medical students think of psoriasis in the pictures they see in textbook, that would be the classic plaque type psoriasis. This is also referred to as psoriasis vulgaris. Then you also get the guttate psoriasis that I mentioned, that's mostly associated with infections, with a lot of small little psoriasis lesions appearing like a lot of raindrops on the skin of a patient. We also get inverse psoriasis and then, of course, pustular psoriasis, which can be a medical emergency if it's widespread. There's also erythrodermic psoriasis, which then, of course, will also be regarded as a medical emergency. So dermatologists do see emergencies.
For the purpose of our listeners, we'd probably be most interested in psoriasis vulgaris, which, as you said, is the most common type. So let me pose a clinical scenario for you then. If a patient comes to you with an itchy, dry skin with well-defined areas of redness and silvery scales, does psoriasis come to mind for you compared to other conditions like eczema?
It's a very good question, as a lot of students do ask us in the clinic, how do you know that this is psoriasis and not eczema or something different? Most medical students are well familiar with the fact that you look for the red scaling blocks, which are mostly well defined, which would be different from eczema. Eczema isn't as specifically defined, it's more diffuse. But I personally think the giveaway would be the location of these blocks. And this would mostly be in friction areas. And that will include your elbows, knees, and also the lower area of the back, as most people sit down for long times during the day. And also in the pediatric population, wearing backpacks to school, you will find those blocks at that areas. So I do think that that's a very valuable tool to just look at the location, as most eczema will be in the flexure areas, that mean the bends of your arms, opposed to psoriasis that will be on the dorsal aspect, for example, the elbows. Then another thing to just have a good look at always is the scalp, as we do see a lot of patients who present with psoriasis on the scalp initially. So that's also very useful, and patients are very surprised if they come with a lesion on the elbow and you identify another block on the scalp. Just another interesting phenomenon with psoriasis is that we do know that therapy for this include UVB and UVA treatment. So this will be better on sun-exposed areas of the skin, as this is a natural form of healing. It's very interesting that patients who went on a sunny holiday or have arms and legs that was exposed to the sun will not have any lesions there. And I think that's also a valuable clue to know that it is psoriasis.
Okay, that was incredibly useful. I'm definitely going to remember this whole concept of friction sites and psoriasis. And I think things like improving with sunlight or a sunny holiday would make some very key points in an exam question for all of us to remember. So thank you for that. And how do you as a dermatologist judge severity of psoriasis?
There are three things to look at, and that would be, first of all, the body surface area that is affected. Secondly, the nature of the blocks, which will include two aspects, both erythema, which mean redness, and induration, which basically mean the thickness of the scales. A very handy tool is to use a PASI, that is PASI calculator, that you will find if you just put it into Google on any computer. And very, very handy to work out on a little diagram, just the percentages, and you score it 0, 1, 2, and just to work out the PASI score, as this is the mainstay of treatment.
Now, something I remember reading from before is Koebner's phenomena related to psoriasis. Could you tell our listeners what that is?
Yes, this is a very good exam question. This is a phenomena where skin lesions develop in an area of injured skin. Now, this is true for psoriasis, but it can also appear in other dermatological conditions. And this can be either in a recently injured or a scar area in a skin where there was previous injury.
Thank you. Now, I suppose we should briefly talk about important comorbidities. Could you just tell us a couple of key highlights for psoriatic arthritis?
So the most common comorbidity of psoriasis would be arthritis. This is usually in patients with severe psoriasis who had the condition for an extensive period of time. And textbooks say that if a patient had severe psoriasis for 10 years or more, they are very likely to start developing arthritis.
Great. Let's move on to the investigations. How do you make the diagnosis of psoriasis?
So psoriasis is mostly a clinical diagnosis, but certain investigations can be helpful if you're uncertain or if it's a very atypical presentation.
And what kind of investigations would you consider?
Well, a skin biopsy would be very helpful as you will be able to see the classic histology pattern under the microscope. And just on a practical level, this would include a punch biopsy in most instances.
Very useful. But it sounds like being a clinical diagnosis, I think people doing the exam should probably focus on the history of the presentation rather than the investigations.
I agree. And it's very seldom that we do a biopsy for psoriasis, even in a tertiary setup. For the purpose of exam, history would be the most important.
That's really good to know. And lastly, let's talk a bit about treatment. How would you approach managing psoriasis then?
So there are different options in the treatment of psoriasis, and current treatments include topical agents, which will always be your first line of treatment. And then we also have photo-based therapies, which include both UVB and PUVA, which is psoriasis tablets followed by UVA treatment. Very important to remember that this is not for younger patients, so you will never refer a pediatric patient or a very young adult for phototherapy, as this can cause non-melanoma skin cancer in later life. Then we have the traditional systemic drugs, which would include methotrexate, acitretin, and cyclosporin. And then, of course, the biologic agents, which is very popular in some settings. But we do have to remember that this is only for severe psoriasis, and patients must always first be started on either topical phototherapy or the traditional systemic treatments before they can be considered for the next step, which will be this immunosuppressive biologic treatments.
So topical therapy and phototherapy, probably the mainstay of initial treatment. Although, as you said, try to avoid phototherapy in pediatric patients. But then we have the systemic therapies and the biologics, but those tend to be more secondary care and a little bit more advanced. I think that's a good algorithm for people to keep in mind. And I think we'll round it up there. We've gone through the important topic of psoriasis, and you've really gone from the definition to the etiology, all the way to presentation and management. Any final words of wisdom that you might have for our listeners?
I do think that it's not that difficult to diagnose dermatology conditions. If you just follow certain pointers, you will get it right. So for psoriasis, I will just focus on the extensor aspects of the extremities, where we usually see these well-defined scaling blocks with a silver surface and a red background.
Amazing. I think that's definitely a key area for all of us to remember. So thank you, Dr. Lisa, for joining us for this episode of Pods for Docs. We really appreciate it. And I believe we've got plans to get you back for more episodes to discuss more dermatology and medicine in general.
I'm looking forward.
As am I. So thank you again. And for our listeners, do check out all the resources on the Plabable website, because there's lots of very useful information there. And until our next episode, take care.